I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
Here's some updates on earlier episodes. Project Greenheart in Louisville, Kentucky has planted 10,000 trees and shrubs. Their study on pollution and heart disease is still ongoing. Ohm Connect is giving away 1 million smart thermostats to prevent brownouts during summer heat waves. More federal money is coming for electric school buses, and Biden signed an executive order directing federal agencies to enforce antitrust in agriculture and develop alternative markets for small farmers. Now, on to the show.
With transportation being the nation's largest source of greenhouse gases, and cars being the largest source of transportation emissions, it's clear we've got to stop burning gasoline.
Automakers are getting ready, but are we? Using the language of addiction to describe our willingness to give up gasoline, 70% of us are in pre-contemplation, 27% are in contemplation, and only 3% are actually abstinent. That's got to change if we want to meet our climate goals. Happily, the survey that produced those numbers also found a clue to a solution. People who have ridden in electric cars are 3 times more likely to consider buying one.
A recent Pew survey about American attitudes towards electric vehicles found that to know them is to love them. People who know more about EVs are more likely to consider buying one, and people who have one are more likely to buy another.
Cost is surprisingly far down the list of reasons people give for not buying electric, and it won't even be on that list for long. Economists predict that electric cars will reach price parity with gas cars in 3 to 4 years. In the long run, EV drivers already come out ahead economically due to savings on fuel and maintenance, but not everyone can muster the cash or credit to cover the upfront cost. What really worries people is the unfamiliar stuff, charging and range, but without the opportunity to get familiar with them, how will they conquer their fears? I drive a Chevy Bolt with a B, the all-electric one. Volt with a V is the hybrid. Last month, I was charging my car in Sacramento when 2 young guys pulled up in another Bolt and plugged in next to me. Turned out they were enthusiastic customers of a public service car sharing program, using the car to make deliveries. And they loved the car, which along with affordable rates, comes with free parking, charging, and insurance. Meeting those young men made me wonder if electric car shares, which give people what amounts to a no-risk extended test drive, might prompt more people to make the switch. I didn't think to whip out my phone and interview them at the time, but it inspired me to talk with another EV car share user.
I was really surprised how quiet it was. It was really quiet and smooth. It's still so good driving it.
Kim An Dao was a beta tester for Good to Go, a new nonprofit car share in the Roxbury neighborhood of Boston. Good to Go rents electric cars to low-income residents for $5 an hour. Kim An talks about the first time she drove an electric car.
At first, I'm like, you have to worry about how many miles you have left and stuff. But everything is in the screen for you. It literally tells you how many miles you have left until the car is dead. The car is like really roomy space-wise. If you need to put a lot of stuff in the car and have room in the trunk, it's still good driving the car. I enjoy the car a lot.
The opportunity to be a beta tester came along at a good time.
It was a really good fit for me because at that time, my car broke down. I'm on the go. I have school. I have work. I have 2 kids.
Kim An was in the middle of training to become a certified nursing assistant.
I had to do clinical training, and my clinical training was pretty far. Without the good-to-go car, I didn't think I could finish my training for my CNA.
The Boston car share was actually inspired by the one in Sacramento. Susan Buchan of E for the Future manages the Boston program called Good to Go.
I asked Susan what the E stands for, and she said there's actually 4 of them.
Energy, economy, equity, and environment.
The car share creates equity by the Robin Hood method. Low-income folks pay $5 an hour, and everyone else pays $10.
That's $1 less than Boston's Zipcar, low enough to lure away some full rate paying customers and high enough to be self-supporting.
We're going to have to build our membership base so we have enough members and have 60% of our users be low income folks and then the other 40% be market rate folks. And that mix will allow us to sustain ourselves.
She says reaching that point will take 3 years.
It's not an immediate path to self-sustainability, but the path is there, and we feel confident we can reach it.
The program, which launched in June 2021, now has 8 electric vehicles.
We have a municipal lot in Jamaica Plain, part of Austin, And that is getting a tremendous amount of usage from residents in that area. And we also have a couple of cars at an affordable housing development, Nuestra Comunidad. It has been steadily growing.
But what about the other three E's, you know, economy, energy, and environment? I've read that car shares don't cut emissions as much as we'd like because they actually decrease transit use.
I know that what you're saying is true, that public transit use does decrease in car sharing areas. We don't really know enough, honestly. Is the trade-off just that they had to use public transportation and now they have a personal vehicle option when it makes more sense? Or is there more going on there? What we find in Massachusetts and in the Northeast is a majority of low-income families actually do own a personal vehicle, but it's typically a clunker, some old, unreliable vehicle, and it's usually a gas guzzler. And our main goal is to first and foremost displace those vehicles and give them an option that can be clean, but also work for them when they're going to use a personal vehicle anyway. By no means is it our intention to compete with public transportation because we think that's the cleanest and most sensible way of all to get from place to place, but to try and get people either not to buy a second car or maybe not to drive their clunker and trade that in or get rid of it completely and use an electric vehicle instead.
Some good-to-go customers may be inspired to replace their clunkers with electric cars. Cayman, for one, is sold on them.
If I can choose from normal car and electrical car, I would truly go for electrical car.
What? You don't think Cayman could have that choice? When you hear the words electric car, do you think about rich people?
Yeah, I do.
Well, think again. Because used EVs can actually be quite affordable. 70% of car purchases are for used cars, and you can buy a used electric vehicle for as little as $6,000.
It's the same in Massachusetts. The used EVs, the older ones, $6,000, $7,000 range is not unheard of, and they'll have 30, 35,000 miles on them. Really good deal.
And the good deal doesn't end with the purchase price, since the average EV owner saves $1,200 a year on fuel.
Andrew Garberson of Recurrent Auto says there are also great deals on late model cars.
We're seeing a dramatic decrease in used car prices once they transition from new to used. And so that creates a huge opportunity. If you're looking for a used car and you want to spend less than $20,000, that would open up a 2018 Volkswagen e-Golf, a Nissan Leaf, the 2018 Chevy Bolt. These are only three-year-old vehicles that are now less than $20,000.
The e-Golf and the Leaf go 100 miles on a charge, and the Bolt has 200 miles of range.
So not every electric car on the road is a Tesla Model S that's $90,000. There are a lot of ways for more price-conscious car shoppers like me to buy their first electric car. We saw a lot of leasing in 2018 and 2019, and so a lot of those lease vehicles are becoming available right now. 3 years ago, the Model 3 was really released in mass in the United States, and we're going to see a lot of three-year-old Model 3s coming off lease. We think that that'll be a pretty exciting opportunity for people to buy their first electric car with an incredible range.
A lot of those leased cars are hitting their three-year mark now.
But maybe there's a really good reason for that price drop. Is this a case of you get what you pay for, or is it just fear of the unknown?
That's where Recurrent comes in.
The reason that Recurrent exists is to put more electric cars on the road and keep them on the road once they're there. In order for electric cars to be sustainable, we need people to have confidence that they are worth something after the first owner. Otherwise, only people with disposable income would buy them. So we need there to be confidence that a vehicle still has the range and can still satisfy a family, even if it's a second generation or a third generation vehicle owner. So we feel like it's a critical piece for electric cars to be successful over the long term, because nobody wants to buy an iPhone that only lasts for a year and then they have to go out and buy another iPhone. A legacy internal combustion engine, it has 2,000 moving parts, let's say, give or take. An electric motor has maybe 24. And the most important part and the most expensive is the EV battery. which is literally a black box. There's no way to look into it. And so we're here to make battery health and the actual range more transparent.
Shopping for a used EV is different than buying a conventional car.
An internal combustion engine, a gasoline vehicle, and an electric car age in very different ways, and different factors affect their age differently. We're all familiar with buying a car, and we look around for scratches and any imperfections. Are there dents? Anything that we can see with our eyes? And then the next thing we look at is the odometer, which has been the best indicator of vehicle health. Does the vehicle have 20,000 miles? Does it have 50? Does it have 150 or 250? And that's going to be a pretty good indicator of vehicle health. With an electric car, odometer is a factor, but it might not even be the leading factor. There are a number of factors, like how well the car has been treated. Has it been kept in a climate-controlled area? Or has it been sitting in the Southern California sun for the last 10 years? Or is it charged to 100% every night, which would quickly degrade the battery over time? So how well is it cared for? Anyone with an iPhone knows that batteries slowly degrade over time. And while we shouldn't compare them exactly, the batteries are very different. I think it's something that we all understand, that a battery just is not going to be as good 1, 2, 3 years down the road as it is the first day that it comes off the line. So the questions that we hear, especially from used car buyers, is what is the real world actual range of this vehicle? How is that going to change in different conditions, like summer, winter? And then how is that going to change 3 years down the line?
And how would a prospective buyer get answers to those questions?
The best possible way would be to remove the battery from the vehicle, ship it to a lab, and perform chemical testing. That is, as it sounds, a bit costly and a bit slow, and it doesn't sound much like the Jiffy Lube by my house, and probably not yours either. So the next best option is through machine learning.
Science break. What's machine learning? That's when a computer sifts through large amounts of data looking for patterns and uses those patterns to make predictions. If the prediction turns out to be wrong, the computer, all by itself, improves the algorithm or set of rules it's using, so its predictions become more accurate. It's how Alexa learns your voice and Netflix picks your movies. In the case of the black box battery,
one of the nice things about electric cars is that they're highly connected. Your vehicle speaks with the internet throughout the day. It downloads software updates, and as part of that, it's able to upload information about the state of charge, whether it's plugged in currently or not, whether it's charging currently or not, and how many miles it adds in a given day. And that's really the only information that we need to be able to understand how a battery is performing.
But that's longitudinal data. It's not like Recurrent could call up the battery of a car on a car lot and say, how you doing?
We can take that one vehicle, find other vehicles that look a lot like it in terms of expected range and region, so where it is in the US, and then begin to say, well, if all of the other cars that we look at that looked pretty similar to this car a year ago ended up with a 150-mile actual range, we can start to have pretty good level of confidence that that's what this car will be like.
So you predict what's going on in the black box instead of actually looking inside it.
I think there's a tendency to look down on older EVs because the new ones have longer ranges.
Andrew says, rather than compare an old car to a new car, we should compare the range of the old car with the distance we actually need to drive between charges.
Well, I think some people look at range as bigger always being better. In reality, range is pretty personal. If we drive to grandma's house every week and it's an 80-mile round trip journey, we want to make sure that we can get there this year and next year and the year after without fear that we won't be able to make it all in one charge. That might be where we would suggest 150-mile actual range this year, which will degrade over time, but will always get you to grandmother's house on every Sunday, compared to maybe a 300-mile range, which would cost a lot more and you wouldn't use as often.
You You are listening to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. We're talking with Andrew Garberson of Recurrent Auto about all the still pretty good and much more affordable used electric vehicles that are coming on the market. Recurrent is collecting charging and mileage data from thousands of used cars on the road to learn more about the condition of used electric car batteries. Are they crumping, aging gracefully, or still going strong? So what are you finding as these cars get older?
We do see range loss in the first year as a battery puts on its first miles, but then we see it be pretty static over the next few years with the expectation that in later years you will start to see some range loss. But these are not huge numbers. I think that people go back to their iPhone and they think about, oh, well, at year two, now it won't even last a day and I'm plugging it in every time I get in the car. Electric car batteries are lasting much longer than original estimates, where you're seeing 5 to 10% losses in range over many years. A number of cars now are coming off the line with more than 300 miles of actual range. And so 10 or 20% range loss, you're looking at 30 to 60 miles of loss. That vehicle still has more than 250 miles of range, which doesn't affect most people day in and day out. Forbes did a research study last year and found that average range was less than 40 miles a day. And with the drivers that we're connected to, we see that it's even less than that. It's about 30 miles per day on average.
Most car manufacturers warranty their batteries for 8 to 10 years or 100,000 miles. The average car on the road in the U.S. is 12 years old.
What's the life expectancy for an electric vehicle?
It's hard to make a blanket statement this year on what a vehicle will do over 10 years because we just haven't seen that many vehicles that are 10 years old. You know, you can look back at Tesla's Model S, which is over 10 years now for the first models, but the Chevy Bolt, the Model 3, the Leaf, these are the most popular electric cars in the United States and in the world, and we haven't seen 10 years yet.
The information Recurrent is using to predict the longevity of EV batteries comes from regular EV owners around the country who volunteer to let Recurrent ping their cars and collect some information. There were 4,000 of them when Andrew and I had this conversation. When I checked back 2 weeks later, it was closer to 5,000.
Each day, those 4,000 vehicles upload a few data points to the Recurrent system, and then they receive a report every month for free on the status of their vehicle, some information about past driving and range fluctuations, and then a market estimate on the vehicle's value. So those are all designed to help car owners understand more about their electric cars while they own it, and then give them some confidence when it becomes time to sell it as well. And then for car dealers, to help them buy and sell vehicles at the appropriate price, we do offer a paid report so that as they have opportunities for trade-ins or at auctions, we want them to understand what they're buying. That's how we pay the bills. So we have a few dozen dealers around the U.S. that subscribe to reports from Recurrent each month. But for the drivers, it's free. And obviously, we encourage all drivers to join.
When you consider that Recurrent is trying to assess batteries in different makes, models, years, and parts of the country, even 5,000 cars hardly seems like enough. But with 400 new car owners signing up every week, the data pool and the company are rapidly expanding.
We're a very young company, so we just celebrated our first year of incorporation last week. And for many of the months of the first year, it was just a couple of founders. And so a lot of the team is pretty new as we grow quickly. We're really excited. We've got a lot of big news planned this year as we add team members, add functionality to our reports for drivers, and also introduce some new tools for shoppers as they are walking around the car lot and they're considering their first car. We think that we have some really helpful data that can help them make a buying decision.
I know you're working remotely, but what kind of vehicles are in Recurrent's virtual parking lot?
We do have a number of EV owners, and it's an interesting mix of people. Some, they've owned an EV for many years, and they might have a, you know, 2012 or 2013 Nissan Leaf, while others are shopping for their first EV for the first time. And others are on a waiting list for a new EV that's coming out. I'm in the middle of the US, where we've got a lot of miles to cover to even get to a grocery store. So I have a plug-in electric hybrid that goes 20 miles on battery. And then if I'm making a road trip, it would switch over using primarily gasoline.
How do you find EV drivers who let you tap into their cars?
We're very lucky that a lot of our drivers sign up by word of mouth, but we do recruit through forums, through electric car groups. We're always looking for drivers to share those four anonymous data points with us so that we can have a better understanding of different years, different makes, different models, and then different regions of the United States. When it comes to machine learning, more is better. We're always eager to look for vehicles where we have fewer data points. So we have hundreds or thousands of vehicles that are from Tesla that are a Model 3 or a Model S. Some places where we're always looking for more vehicles would be the Volkswagen e-Golf. We're always looking for the Audi e-tron. And we're certainly always looking for different regions, places in the US that were not as early adopters of electric vehicles.
So if any electric vehicle drivers are listening and want to sign up, how do they do that?
You'd go to recurrentauto.com or do a search engine search for Recurrent Auto. And there's a section for vehicle owners to connect to your vehicle.
Have you found any models that are lemons that just don't age well?
I don't think there are any vehicles right now that I would say don't buy. I think it's more about paying the appropriate price for them.
If you want to buy a used EV at a good price, you'd better get moving because prices are going up.
Manufacturers are not producing the same number of new cars that they were a year ago. And so all car prices are going up right now, especially used car prices. And we have seen used electric car prices go up. A car shopper might pay $3,000 or $4,000 extra for a used electric car in June or July than they would have in February or March.
If Recurrent is successful at increasing consumer confidence in used EVs, prices are going to rise even more. But on the bright side, when you buy a used EV, you'll know a lot more about what you're getting.
Recurrent will be publishing on our website a lot of the data that we've collected over the last year by various makes and models. And so it's a chance for people to explore that firsthand.
And Andrew shared these tips for EV drivers about preserving battery health.
We don't think about it very much when we plug in our phone at the end of the day. We just charge it until it's full. But when the battery in your vehicle is $10,000, $15,000, we are incentivized as drivers to take really good care of it. We recommend that people don't leave their vehicle too low or too high in terms of charge state. The 50 to 80% is the ideal state. If you're charging to 100% and then discharging all the way to zero each week, that can be pretty hard on an electric car battery. We've also kind of made the joke that a DC fast charger, a charging station that charges your vehicle very, very fast, is like eggnog. It's best saved for special occasions. So sometimes, whether you're on a road trip or you use your electric car for work and you really need to charge quickly, absolutely use DC fast charging. But something that charges a little bit slower and maybe you're using it a bit more consistently, a little bit here and there, can help extend the battery life of a vehicle. The last thing I would call out would be the temperature. Try to let your vehicle cool down before plugging it into a charger. Again, these are things that sometimes can't be avoided. You can't pull off the highway going 75 miles an hour with children in the car and really needing to get to your destination and wait. But day in and day out, when you can, keep an eye on the temperature at which you're charging your vehicle. And we've got a list of charging best practices and actually a free tag that you can keep in your car at recurrentauto.com/tags.
While price and range are important, there's one more factor that must be addressed to increase electric vehicle adoption, and that's charging. When people are surveyed about their hesitation to buy an EV, charging is at the top of the list.
Most EV owners charge their cars at home, but 40% of Americans don't have access to EV charging where they live. If we want EV equity and ubiquity, we need more chargers at workplaces and apartment buildings, especially in low-income communities where people stand to benefit the most from economic savings and clean air. The compromise infrastructure bill passed by Congress cut proposed funding for EV charging stations in half. There's enough left for 250,000 charging stations. But a report by the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley found that to meet the president's goal of banning gas and diesel cars by 2035, we need to install that many public charging stations every year.
So we've got to get going, and a lot of towns and cities are stepping up. Los Angeles and Kansas City are adding curbside charging stations by attaching them to light poles.
Denver, Washington, D.C., Honolulu, Seattle, Atlanta, and a number of smaller cities have revised their building codes to require every new housing unit to have a parking space ready for an EV to plug in. And Boston, Sacramento, Minneapolis, and Denver are putting reduced-cost car shares and charging stations in low-income communities so everyone can experience driving an electric vehicle. If you're in the market for a used EV, looking ahead, or just plain curious, we've got links on our website, cool-solutions.org, that let you see how much money you'd save driving an electric vehicle, what incentives your state has to offer, and how to hook up with Recurrent. And take Kimon Dao's advice.
If people give it a try, they will love it.
To double the chance that your next car is electric, find a car share where you live that has EVs and take one out for a spin. I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis. And that thing that just happened was Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our guests, Kimon Dao, Susan Buchan, and Andrew Garberson. And to Scott Holmes, Ketsa, and Xylo Zico for our music.